Dan Seaver.
I want to be a nation that is on the biblical principles and the values and the ethics that are found in Scripture.
Your personal economy.
Financial issues that you need to know.
Aligning reality with truth.
Well, I think it's time we ask ourselves if we still know the freedoms that were intended for us by the founding fathers.
Now, here's your host, Dan Seaver.
Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. If you want to queue your call, you are welcome to do that. So we've got a number of things. First of all, President Trump said yesterday that U.S. authorities would begin next week removing, just saying what he said, removing millions of illegal immigrants who are in the United States. They will be starting next week. I would suspect that the Democrats would go along with that. Here's a clip that might verify that the Democrats would go along with that.
1 year ago this month, senators of both parties, with support from the business community, labor, law enforcement, faith communities, came together to pass a common sense immigration bill. Independent experts said that bill would strengthen our borders, grow our economy, shrink our deficits. As we speak, there are enough Republicans and Democrats in the House to pass an immigration bill today. I would sign it into law today. And Washington would solve a problem in a bipartisan way. But for more than a year, Republicans in the House of Representatives have refused to allow an up or down vote on that Senate bill or any legislation to fix our broken immigration system. And I held off on pressuring them for a long time to give Speaker Boehner the space he needed to get his fellow Republicans on board. Meanwhile, here's what a year of obstruction has meant. It's meant fewer resources to strengthen our borders. It's meant more businesses free to game the system by hiring undocumented workers, which punishes businesses that play by the rules and drives down wages for hardworking Americans.
So obviously the Democrats know a little bit about doing nothing, right, on immigration. Now, President Obama was all about trying to do something on immigration. It was all about boosting the economy through securing our border, protecting against the hiring of illegal immigrants. He actually used the word illegal. Do you believe it? A Democrat used the word illegal. Yeah, he actually did. You heard it. Pretty amazing. Now we've got Democrats doing nothing to secure our borders, to protect Americans, when obviously there was a sentiment back when President Obama was president that we ought to do that. Somehow that's gone away. Is it because President Trump wants to do it this time instead of President Obama? Yeah, that would be the reason. Pretty amazing. Oh, man. 844-707-5533. I found that clip because I was looking for clips, and I found an article that indicate that just before the inauguration of President Trump, that the White House deleted, White House staffers, deleted all the video clips on immigration. That was a clip still hanging out there on YouTube. Once it gets there, hard to get rid of, but nonetheless. Oh, man, I'll tell you, it is amazing. Hey, President Trump, just 28 minutes ago, sent out a tweet. Would have a lot to do with why the markets are where they are. We're coming to our ag report, though. I'll hold off on that tweet. But it is doesn't take much to do anything. And I tell you, I said this morning to somebody, I was doing an early morning interview on a radio station out on the West Coast. So it was the middle of the night out there for all practical purposes. But, you know, indicating what is going on here, we're talking about immigration and what is happening. And got on to China and what is going on with the fact that there is no trade deal. And is that hurting the economy? Yes, it's hurting sentiment. I don't want to say it's hurting the economy. Obviously, sentiment going bad will hurt the economy, and it's hurting business sentiment. And I said on, you'll see this week, tonight, I said on CBN News that, look, the G Summit meeting next week in Japan is going to be more like trying to come up with a truce instead of a trade deal. That's how bad all of this is going. All right, here's our ag report. So important. Here's Craig Haugard. Then we'll be right back.
This is Craig Haugard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. Corn continues to be driven by weather fears in the Corn Belt. After hitting new life of contract highs in most months yesterday, prices retreated midday on a bout of profit-taking and some technical selling. After the close, the weekly crop progress report indicated that 92% of the corn crop is now planted. That means that about 7.4 million acres are still not planted, and as late in the season as we are, I don't think I'm going too far out on the limb to suggest that they probably won't get planted this year. 79% of the corn crop has now emerged, and that lags the five-year average of 97%. 59% of the crop is rated as good to excellent, which again lags the five-year average, which is normally at 73% at this point on the calendar. As I record this, the overnight spot corn futures are trading down a nickel. Soybean prices drew support from adverse weather conditions over the weekend, with more rains forecast for this week. Now, while the world is focused on weather and the potential supply issues, it is worth noting that Monday's main NOPA crush report was disappointing. It shows that as a nation, we crushed 154.8 million bushels of soybeans in May. That was well below the trade expectation of 162.5 million bushels. This marks the third straight month in which we've lagged the year-earlier monthly crush rate. Now, the weekly crop progress report continues to feed the bulls, with the report now showing 77% of the crop planted. And that leaves 19.5 million acres still left unplanted, and we're quickly running out of time. In the overnight trade, spot soybean futures are trading up 2 cents as I record this. The wheat market traded higher as weather concerns continue to strengthen U.S. wheat prices. Winter wheat harvest is slow going from all the rain and saturated fields. Early reports of protein are said to be in that 10 to 11% range, with early yield reports coming in anywhere from 30 to 50 bushels per acre. The weekly crop progress report shows 89% of the winter wheat crop headed, with 8% harvested. The 5% average would be for 20% of that crop to now be harvested as we continue to see the negative impact of those tough weather conditions resulting in a slower harvest pace. Spring wheat is 95% emerged, with 2% of the crop headed. That crop is a bit late as well, with the five-year average being 12% headed by now. In the overnight trade, Chicago and Kansas City are each down 6 cents, while Minneapolis is down 2. Cotton had a mixed session, with old crop July futures down 31 points at 65.63, while new crop December futures finished the day up 67 points. After the close, the crop progress report indicated that 89% of the crop is planted, with 19% squaring. In the overnight trade, spot cotton futures are trading 35 points lower. The livestock market enjoyed a good day, with prices higher straight across the board. August live cattle finished the session up $1.35, while August feeder cattle closed $1.40 higher for the day. Lean hog futures were stronger as well, with August finishing the session $1.62.5 higher. Class 3 milk futures took a slight setback, with July futures settling down 4 points as they closed at $16.81. And the overnight trade spot futures are trading down an additional 4 points as I record this. In the cash markets, choice beef boxes were 41 cents lower, to settle at $221.82, while selects were down 25 cents for the day, settling at $202.51. In hogs, the pork carcass values finished 24 cents lower as they settle at $82.97. This has been Craig Haugard with your Financial Issues Ag Update. We'll be right back with more financial issues after this.
How about Vice President Mike Pence yesterday speaking at a rally of Latinos for Trump? Latinos for Trump. And I'm sure it was very, very well received, some of the things he said. And I just was thinking about this from a news perspective, something we ought to listen to. Take a listen to what Vice President Mike Pence said to Latinos for
Latino
Trump.
Americans know better than most about the cost of socialism. It's impoverished generations. It's stolen the liberty of millions. I know that for many of you in this room, many of your families fled socialist regimes in this hemisphere, and you came to freedom in America. You know, Latino Americans know that it was freedom, not socialism, that gave us the most prosperous and powerful nation in the history of the world. It was freedom. Latino Americans know that it was freedom, not socialism, that ended slavery, won two world wars, and stands today as a beacon of hope for all the world. And so here at this kickoff of Latinos for Trump, we must say, as the president said in his State of the Union address, America will never be a socialist country.
Yeah, amen to that, huh? And I assume, I didn't hear the whole speech, but I assume that Vice President Pence went on to talk about Latino Americans' unemployment rate being at some historical low levels right now in the United States, along with Asia. Asia Americans, as well as African American community, being at the lowest unemployment rate in the history of the nation. Women's employment, the highest it's been in the history of America. So many good numbers out there. These numbers are going to stand for a very, very long time. And, you know, we are seeing a wellspring of organic support, grassroots kind of support for President Trump out of these minority communities. It has been unbelievable. And if you want to know just another reason why the left despises this president so much, this would be another reason. Remember, this is their community. See, the Democrats believe that they've got a lock on these people. They treat them as if they have no common sense, if they have no abilities whatsoever to look at right from wrong. That's how they've been treated for the last 40 years by Democrats. And that is beginning to fail the Democratic Party. If that fails the Democratic Party, the only thing they have left is going to be the millennials and the millennial generation. And I don't know if that's anything to hang their hat on, because they may be able to pull millennials in for a very temporary time, but it's not going to last very long, because they too will get more and more informed and more educated about reality, and they will lose that group as well. They're in a very, very bad situation. Speaking of news, I know Ian Patrick has an interesting story for us. How about this? Boy, this is so needed. And I know, Ian, you're going to talk about this. We're going to play a little clip from Senator Ted Cruz. Look at what Senator Ted Cruz is trying to do. Go ahead, Ian. What do you got?
Thanks, Dan. So Texas Republican Senator Ted Cruz has been fighting for months now on an amendment he introduced to impose term limits for congressional representatives. Now, he and Florida Republican Representative Francis Rooney introduced the amendment in January, and they recently held a hearing where Democrats and Republicans alike debated the necessity of the bill.
Too many career politicians don't want to restrict their own power, and neither party wants to act on its own.
The amendment calls for 2 6-year terms for senators and 3 2-year terms for members of the House of Representatives, and it would take effect after being ratified retroactively, meaning all members of Congress would still serve up to the new limits if they are reelected. Now, this particular section has drawn some criticism, as it would mean that Senator Cruz would also be able to serve two more terms after it's ratified. But Senator Cruz doesn't listen to these criticisms. He believes this to be a step forward for Washington politicians. And in a recent tweet, he mentioned that this, quote, is essentially a case for draining the swamp, referring to the corruption in government.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Ian. That is great. You know, isn't that the truth? And, you know, you got to love Ted Cruz for even proposing such a bill. The odds of it being passed, as you can imagine, are probably either slim or none. So the chances of it being passed are very slim. But here's the thing. It will be another, just one more thing in 2020 for constituents of both Republicans and Democratic congressmen and senators to say, why did you vote against it? You obviously have desires to just be a career politician. You obviously know you can't get another job. You obviously love the power. You obviously don't believe this would be good for America. I mean, Republicans and Democrat voters alike will have an opportunity in 2020 to ask their representatives why they voted against this if it doesn't pass. And we are in an environment today where the people of America are so ready for term limits. Now, I am one that for years and years, when people used to say, we need term limits, I was one of the people that said, we don't need term limits. We have term limits already. It's called the voting booth. We just vote everybody out. We don't need term limits. What we've got to do is exercise the term limits that we have been given an opportunity to institute at the voting booth. But we don't do that. And maybe I was a little naive in saying those things all that time, but you know what? The fact of the matter is we do need term limits. We need term limits because if nothing else, these senators and representatives will get something done in the last term of their office so they can leave some sort of mark for the future, for future generations. When they know they don't have to get reelected, maybe we can get some things done. So great piece of legislation. I applaud Ted Cruz for putting it forth. If Ted Cruz is your senator, then you need to call the congressional switchboard, which, by the way, the phone number is 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121. That's the congressional switchboard's phone number. You just got to call and say, hey, can I have Senator Cruz's office? They're going to put you right through to his office. You're going to either get his voicemail or you're going to get a, you know, someone answering the phone. And all you've got to do is say, please thank Senator Cruz for putting forth this bill. And we are going to fight with him to make sure the bill gets passed, although that is going to be a very difficult task. So pretty amazing. And again, we need to encourage Senator Cruz for doing that. It certainly deserves some encouragement. 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. By the way, as we look at the futures market right now, we see that things are trading in positive territory. So we'll see. We had a, I don't want to say we had a rough day. It wasn't really a rough day. We didn't have things that were down dramatically. But Dow futures are up about a quarter of 1%, 78 points. Early this morning, they were up 150 points. I only say that to you to give you an idea that sentiment is starting to turn a little bit more gloomy here this morning. Oil prices are up. We're looking at oil prices at over $59 a barrel. They're up about 2.5%. That is a significant move on oil. And it looks like NASDAQ futures are up. They took the biggest hit yesterday. They're up about 0.5%. and the S&P futures up about a third of 1%. Again, all of these indexes, with the exception of oil, were higher than this earlier this morning. So we've got about 3 minutes before the markets open. They certainly look like they're all going to open in positive territory. The Federal Reserve speaking yesterday, talking about global stocks, fell, by the way, global stocks fell around the world. The dollar rose on Wednesday, dollar getting stronger this morning, but nonetheless, stocks are a little bit muted. Dollar is getting stronger based on Chairman Powell and others. The Federal Reserve claimed to make, to calm, I'll say, the excitement about the possibility of a very large rate cut in July, 50 basis points. In other words, it didn't sound like 50 basis points is going to happen. It sounds like it might be 25 basis points, but Jerome Powell, along with St. Louis Fed Reserve President James Bullard, went on to say yesterday that market expectations and presidential pressure for a significant U.S. interest rate cut will be based not on any of that, but it's going to be based on data. They're going to be looking at a number of things in the upcoming weeks. Powell said that the central bank is insulated from any kind of short-term political pressures, but he and his colleagues are currently considering whether the uncertainties around U.S. tariffs, trade, and the notion that Washington's conflicts with trading partners and low inflation will merit a rate cut. That's along with the economic data that I am certain they're going to be looking at very closely. So, 844-707-5533. Meanwhile, oil prices this morning were falling early. They are now up dramatically. U.S. crude supplies came out by API yesterday. I'll give you those numbers in a minute. But later on this morning, we get EIA numbers. We'll see what they look like. We're going to go to phones, 844-707-5533. Welcome back. Financial Issues, 844-707-5533, 844-707-5533. As we look at the open of the markets, all the indices in positive territory, the Dow's up a third. The Nasdaq's up almost 1%, so pretty significant move in technologies. I would suspect that that's driven by Micron. Had a very good earnings report yesterday. And some of the questions that I am asking. Could this be the end of the little bit of drought that we've had in semiconductors? It's very, very possible. It is not likely that we're going to see this stock on my buy list anytime soon. But nonetheless, it was a good earnings report. S&P's up about a half of 1%. Even small caps are up about a half of 1%. So the question is, will it hold? That is the question. All right, let me go to phones. Let me go to Les. Les is calling us from Texas. Hi, Les.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And I want to pat you on the back for your comments about Ted Cruz and encouraging us to call his office. I haven't done it yet, but I wish you had extended the discussion about why voters don't take advantage of the voting booth as a term limit place. And I believe there are two reasons. Number one is the public education system. And all these complaints that they had more than 100 years ago about a public education system have come true. Mm. That is, it's run by the government to grow the government. That's what it's for.
Yeah, amen.
And then I've forgotten the other thing. I thought I wanted to touch on to, but
Well, that's okay. It'll come to you. But, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, that is surely one of the reasons. And I think that the other thing that we struggle with, it's our human nature, unfortunately, to get complacent real easy. And, you know, and the other thing is that we buy into the same rhetoric that won the person into office, and we don't look at whether they followed through to try to get anything done. We just don't know. We just don't watch. We can find out easy enough, but we don't look, you know. And then these guys come back into town, so to speak, and they hold the town hall meetings, and they run all the spots on the local television, and they're saying all the same things that they said 2 or 6 years ago. And we buy into it either in the sense that we don't vote because they're already in and we feel like we don't have to. But the biggest issue, Les, that I've not had any luck getting across to people, I mean, in certain places we have, but, you know, the country is, from a political perspective, it is not about the election. It is about the primary elections. And so many people don't vote in the primaries because we don't have any shot of replacing a lousy politician, because we're just so conditioned by, I believe, the government, conditioned that the primaries don't matter, don't worry about it, you don't have to go. We just want to go to the general election. And it's the primaries that change the course of politics, yet so few of us vote in those primaries. So there's a great Republican, I think about this in Virginia, in Richmond, when Eric Cantor was running for re-election and was being challenged by someone and, you know, a fellow by the name of Dave Bratt that has since lost, but he knocked out Eric Cantor, a sitting leader, in the primary. It was unprecedented. It never happened before. And, you know, because of a grassroots effort, he only had $100,000. And I know I was beating the drum for it big time. And, you know, he got elected. But that's how things change. And we got to worry about the primaries as well. Good point, though, Les.
That's a good point. I did remember the other point. Well, I'm going to make a separate point. There are prayer calls that I participate in that pray for President Trump and the whole administration.
Yes.
How he's defending Christianity and Christians. It's a wonderful thing, and we're supporting him as much as we can. And I think he's going to be doing some cleaning up in the next few years, and I think he's going to discover that there's a lot more voter fraud going on than we realize.
Boy, isn't that the truth? I'll tell you, Les, I worry about that every day. That is a huge concern, the voter fraud, even for this next presidential election. And a great example of that was the last term that Harry Reid won. And his popularity in Nevada was unbelievably low. I mean, it was a low point of the Democrats in general, but you couldn't find anybody in Nevada that wanted to vote for Harry Reid. And he campaigned, he spent a lot of money. And I think the voter fraud was so miscalculated by the fraudsters. I think they would have liked to have given him a win by 3 or 4 or 5%. He ended up getting a win by something like 16%, which by all counts was impossible. And it was never investigated. It was never looked into. But it was, you know, it was the beginning of so much fraud. There was no way that his popularity was anywhere near that rate. And there were that many voters that wanted to have him back. And yet, Never a word was said about it, practically.
Yes,
and,
exactly, yeah.
Yeah, huge problem and a concern, yes.
There's another contradiction in the news right now. Biden and Trump each had a rally on the same day sometime in the past 2 weeks, right?
Yes.
And what I remember is Trump had about 50,000, Biden had 85.
Yes.
And yet the polls say Biden is leading Trump. Now, wait a minute. Yeah. Who's lying?
Right.
Somebody related to the polls is lying.
Right. That's exactly the... But you know what? Here's the thing about the polls, though. That's a good thing that they're lying. Because Democrats aren't even smart enough to know that they're lying. And they start believing it. And they get complacent. That's what happened with Hillary Clinton. So
sure.
Let them go on believing it. Maybe they'll, you know, get complacent and not spend the money or do what they have to do. But there's no possible way that could be accurate when you look at the numbers. I know it's amazing. Les, thank you, brother.
Thank you.
I appreciate you.
Thank you very much.
All
for
right.
Your program.
You're welcome. Thank you. 844-707-5533. 844-707-5533. You know, I think what Les made a great point. I think he's right. That, boy, can you imagine there's going to be some major cleanup in President Trump's second term. There's going to be some major cleanup. You know, one thing that President Trump has learned, that, number one, it's not so easy to clean a swamp up. It is a very difficult thing to do. And sometimes it takes years and years. You know, many, many years ago, when they were trying to clean up wetlands and swamps, when they were in a semi-tropical area, they brought in eucalyptus trees. And eucalyptus trees can live in that environment, but more importantly than live in the environment, they can suck it dry. They can dry up even the swamp. And but it takes years. And I think President Trump has realized that he's planting some trees now, but it's going to take some time before it takes effect. The other thing is, as unfortunate as it might be, he needs some of the things that go on in the swamp. He needs it. And he has figured that out, that it's not going to be easy because he didn't understand when he came in that it's not like a business. We wish it were, but it isn't. And that he was going to have to do some politicking in order to get some things done. And, you know, he's trying to do that. But in his next term, when he doesn't have to get reelected, he can be about the business of cleaning it up for the next, hopefully, conservative leader that may come into office. 844-707-5533. I want to remind all of you, and I said this yesterday, and it deserves repeating. If you know, please, if you're a partner, don't miss our next conference call. Here's what's happening. We got a G20 meeting. So Monday morning, there's going to be a lot of anxiousness, a lot of reporting, a lot of speculating over what ultimately is going to come out of this G20 meeting. There's going to be a whole lot of that going on. And we are going to be watching and listening to what is coming out of that G20 meeting that is going to impact the markets and the economy. Then, remember, this is over the weekend. That'll finish, so that'll come out Monday. Then on Friday, well, you know what? I don't know about this because of the 4th of July holiday on Thursday. So I don't know if the job numbers will come out this Friday or not. They may get pushed back a week until next Friday. So, but yeah. So I don't know if, so we have G20 meeting ending and then all that coming out Monday. So I don't know if Friday, because of the 4th of July holiday, it is going to, the job numbers will come out. They might get postponed. The way I see it, though, they are still planning on coming out on Friday. So, and I'm talking about Friday after the 4th of July. So next week is going to be a very interesting week because we have a bunch of economic data that is very important that is going to be coming out. And we've got the end of the G20 meeting, and we'll see what that shakes out. I'm most interested in what the European leaders are going to be saying and talking about coming out of that G20 meeting. So through all of that, you don't want to miss the next conference call because I have two scenarios that I'm contemplating and working on from a strategy standpoint for us moving forward. We'll be right back.
The opinions and recommendations expressed by Dan are his own and do not necessarily represent the opinions of this station or any of the show's sponsors.
All right, we're going to get to phones, 844-707-5533, Rapid Fire Friday, financial issues, FISM.TV. I hope you're telling your friends about it. I hope you're checking it out. What you're seeing on FISM.TV, not my program, but all the programming, is just the beginning. We've got so much coming, so we're very excited about it. I hope what we want to do is we want to see that organic growth. So like we've seen with FISM, financial issues, it has been amazing. And, you know, I've said this before and I keep telling people, I mean, we've had over a million on any given week. I don't know. I'm going back like 7-8 weeks ago was the last time I got a number. It was over 1.1 million interactions with our phone app, just our phone app. That's not the rest of our platform. So we're growing those platforms. We want to continue to grow those platforms. You know why? Because we don't want you to ever be without financial issues. And not just this program. Obviously, this is our flagship program. It always will be. And we don't want you to ever be without it. There's too much on the line for you to be without this. This is the reason why you partner with the ministry so you can get a sell order like I put up today on the website. We want you to make sure that you can be a part of this ministry, support this ministry, and through being a partnership, and that you are getting some great, great stewardship opportunity for the kingdom of Jesus Christ, not just for yourself. We want you to be blessed, but we know you will be blessed because God promises us that. Those that bless me, so I shall bless. And we know that, but we want to give you that opportunity to do that as much as we possibly can, because every single person, every time I speak somewhere, I get thousands of people every year telling me they feel so much at peace and thanking me. It's not me. It's not me. If you feel that peace, it's a peace that the Lord's giving you. And he's giving you that peace because you have made a conscious decision to honor him, not just praise him for the blessings, but to honor him with the blessings that he's given you and your money. So that's what we're all about. But all these other things are going to be so that we can continue to minister to a broader segment of the population, because we believe that God didn't build all this and raise up all of this to not be used for kingdom work in every dark corner that we can get to. And that's what we're trying to do. All right, let me go to Kay from Kansas. Hey, Kay. Or not.
Kay, Dan.
Kay's
Hi, Dan.
Not with
me. I'm here, sorry.
Oh, okay.
Thank you.
Hi, Kay.
Hey, I had a parent pass away recently who left an IRA with a fairly significant amount of money. The instructions were that I would split that with my sibling, which I don't have any problem doing. What I'm trying to figure out is if I would cash it out, obviously, I think there would be penalties and taxes due right away, and it would put me in a different income bracket. So I am wondering, is there a way around that? That's my first question. And my second question is, a friend told me about maybe rolling it over into an inheritance IRA that I guess you have to title really specifically, and then I would have a minimum disbursement that I would have to take. But I'm wondering, if I did do that, could my first minimum be to my sibling in that amount and take the taxes out of it, of course, and then I take my rest out at my leisure as long as I meet that minimum amount?
No, so what you have to do is divide the IRA up first. So your siblings, how many siblings do you have?
Just one, and the way that the IRA was, it was transferred from the death, so it's only in my name.
But it is in where was it being held?
In my parents' name.
I know, but at a brokerage? Was it a brokerage account?
I'm still learning all of the details. Sorry, I don't know that.
All right, so it's in an inherited IRA. You might not realize it, but it. I mean that's why I asked you where it was. It would be irresponsible, and frankly, I don't even think it's legal that a brokerage company could roll that into your name without it being an inherited IRA. So it is already in an inherited IRA in all likelihood. If it isn't, that's going to open up a whole nother new set of, can of worms. So hopefully it's already in an inherited IRA. If your sibling was not in the will at all, right? Wasn't named in the will?
But my father told me that I needed to give half.
Yeah, that's fine. But they weren't named in the will at all. There was no name there. There was nothing in the will that divided assets equally.
No.
Okay. So what you've got to do, again, it should already be in an inherited IRA. I sure hope it is. If it's not, you're going to get a huge tax bill. So hopefully it is. It should have been. So I don't know how they could have put it in your name if it isn't. So you're in an inherited IRA. And yes, when you take that minimum required distribution, then whoever the sibling is, you can't make that in a way that they would be responsible for the taxes. So you've got two options. You can get the disbursement, see what half of it is, and if you get a disbursement of $1,000, sounds like it's going to be way more than that, but if you get a disbursement of $1,000 and you want to give $500 to your sibling, then you have to do the tax calculation and give that sibling $397 or whatever it is. You know what I mean? Whatever the tax is, that you do the calculation. So you can do that, but you are going to be responsible. You can't put the responsibility of the tax in any way, shape, or form on that sibling.
Yes, and I did understand that. I just figured that I would take the taxes out of their portion. And then my thought was at least maybe I wouldn't get put in the higher income bracket.
Oh, no. It's
just the half.
No, it's all going to be counted to you as income. Yeah, you can't avoid that either. So the disbursement, that $1,000, using that example again, the whole $1,000 is going to count to you as income. They can't separate the 1099. So at the end of the year, you're going to get a 1099 for $1,000 as a distribution from that.
Right.
And you're going to have to file. Yep.
And then just to make this a little bit tougher, my father, one of the things that he really wanted, he wanted us both to have the money, and he felt like that he lived his whole life saving and didn't get to use it, and he wanted us to use it. So I don't know if I would take my half out or if I would leave it and let it grow, but if I did take my half out, it would just be the same. It'd be the taxes, and that would be it. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Is there any better way to do that? So my biggest thing is to honor my father's wishes and make sure that I get the half to my sibling and do it quickly. He wanted it done very quickly. So is there a better way to do it than what I'm thinking?
No, when you say take the half out, you mean a lump sum half?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, no, there's no better way to do it. I mean, other than not to do it like that. I mean, that's really going to, you said it was a considerable amount. It's going to put you in a terrible tax position because you'll have to pay all that tax this year on that half. And then next year, you're going to have to estimate taxes to the IRS for that amount every quarter next year, even though you're not going to do that again and you're not going to have it. And you should get most of those estimated taxes back, but nonetheless, they're going to make you estimate those taxes. So that's kind of annoying. So you're going to have the burden of the tax, you know, that you have to pay, and then you're going to have the same burden of the taxes you're going to have to pay next year. The difference is next year, you should get most of it back. But yeah, that there's no other way of doing it, unfortunately.
Okay. I appreciate that, Dan. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, Kay. I wish you all the best. God bless. Folks, I got to take a second here to just, this is why, and if we have people listening that are seniors, people listening that are retired, and, you know, look, the vast majority of the wealth in this nation, trillions, $17, $18 trillion of the wealth in this nation is held in qualified money, IRA money. You know, you are not doing your heirs any help. You're not helping them by not spending that money. You need to have a systematic plan of withdrawing that money on a regular basis and paying tax on it, because it's so much better for them to pay, for you to pay your tax rate on it now, as opposed to pushing your children in higher tax brackets and paying a higher tax rate on that money. They're getting far less money by doing that. Start that withdrawal. You can't avoid the taxes. You can avoid